Help all kids learn and grow with PBS Kids. Thank you for supporting your PBS station.
Butterfly in the sky. I can go twice as high. Take a look. It's in a book. A reading rainbow.
Hi, here I am in one of my favorite places in the world, Central Park. It's hundreds of acres of beautiful hills and trees with paths that crisscross every which way for miles. And it's all smack dab in the middle of New York City. Isn't it something? Today, I'm supposed to meet some of my friends way across the park for a picnic. I suppose the easiest thing for me to do would be to take a shortcut. Well, that's what the kids in this book did. They tried to take a shortcut, but it didn't turn out anything like they expected. Instead, they ended up going on a totally wild adventure. It's called The Secret Shortcut.
The Secret Shortcut by Mark Teague. Read by Tim Conway. On Monday, Wendell and Floyd were late for school. They had nearly been captured by space creatures, they told the teacher.
Ridiculous,
said Miss Gernsblatt, and she warned them not to let it happen again. But Tuesday was no better. Pirates were loose in the neighborhood. It was sheer bad luck, Wendell and Floyd explained when they showed up late for school.
Preposterous,
said Miss Gernsblatt. On Wednesday, even though Wendell and Floyd left early, a plague of frogs made them late once again.
Absurd,
cried their teacher.
I'm warning you. Be here on time tomorrow, or else. And no more crazy excuses.
Floyd arrived at Wendell's house so early the next morning that the sun was barely up. And Wendell was still in his pajamas.
I got an idea. We'll follow my secret shortcut and get to school even sooner.
Shortcut, said Floyd. I didn't know there was any good shortcuts to school.
Well, this is the secretest shortcut of all. In fact, I invented it myself.
He led Floyd up the alley, then down a culvert, over a fence, and through a dense thicket of blackberry vines. Then they scrambled over some boulders, down a steep bank.
This is some shortcut,
said Floyd.
Relax. We'll be there in a minute.
But the forest became thicker and darker. And soon it was hung with vines and the screeches of strange jungle animals echoed all around.
Maybe we took a wrong turn, said Floyd. I'm pretty sure the school is right up ahead,
Wendell told him. But the jungle only grew wilder. When the boys finally came to a trail, it didn't lead straight to the school. Instead, it meandered through quicksand swamps and past large, sleeping crocodiles.
I have an idea. We'll climb a tree and see if we can spot the school.
They chose the biggest, tallest tree they could find and climbed all the way to the top.
Do you see the school? I don't even see the town. I have another idea, said Wendell.
Yeah? What is it?
Asked Floyd. He is getting tired of Wendell's ideas.
We'll swing from these vines just like the monkeys. Now, that way we'll travel much faster.
Soon they were swinging from vine to vine.
I knew this shortcut would work out.
But at that moment, they ran out of vines, and the boys landed kaplop in a giant pool of mud. Oh, now what'll we do? Asked Floyd.
I don't know. I'm out of ideas.
He sat in a puddle and thought about all the trouble they were going to be in. Just then, from far away, they heard the school bell ring.
De-ling-dong, de-ling-dong. Did you hear that? That was the first bell. We can still make it if we run.
They ran until the jungle gave way to the forest, and the forest became woods. And then they scurried up the hill to the school. They flew through the door of Miss Gernsblatt's room and landed squishingly in their seats just as the late bell rang.
Ding, 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 dong, ding. Well, you made it. And just in time. But how on earth did you get so muddy just walking to school? On second thought, maybe you better not say.
During recess, Wendell and Floyd sat in the sun to give the mud a chance to dry.
At least we finally got to school on time, said Wendell.
That's the main thing,
Floyd agreed. And in fact, it was quite a while before they were late to school again. Even so, they never did find a really good shortcut.
Wendell and Floyd might have had an easier time if they had a better sense of direction, or at least knew some tips on how to get around. If you're not sure where you are and you need to find your way, it's good to be skilled at something called orienteering. And Chris Cassone here is an expert at that. How you doing, Chris?
Hello, boy.
So, Chris, orienteering. I love the word, but what exactly does it mean?
Well, orienteering is a system of finding your way.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And if you have the right tools,
right,
a map and a compass, you'll never get lost.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, so how does it work?
Well, first you need a map.
Okay.
The map is the most important tool. And as you see on this map,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of colors.
Right.
Colors are important. We all know what blue is.
And that represents water?
Water.
Okay.
Big lake,
mm-hmm.
streams, and marshes.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's white. White is a very important color for orienteers. That's the color of woods.
Okay.
But when the woods get thick, we put dark colors of green. Where the woods get open, or mowed grass, their mm-hmm. colors are yellow.
Okay.
And our most important feature are these brown squiggly lines we call contour lines. And if you know how to read them, it makes the map become 3D.
Now, contour lines, what do you mean? What do they represent?
Well, they represent equal points of elevation. So wherever they're connected, it's the same height. So where they're close together, it gets very steep.
So that would be a hill.
Right, that's a hill. Where they're far apart, it's very flat.
Nice
field.
And so how does the compass play into it?
Well, the compass helps us figure out which way the map goes. On the compass is a magnetic needle.
Right.
Always pulling towards north. On the orienteering map are magnetic north lines.
This dotted black line here?
That's that.
Okay.
So if we align our red needle with our magnetic north line on the map,
mm-hmm.
go ahead, turn it. Go ahead. Now your map is oriented.
I get it. And what are these red circles represent?
Well, these red circles are part of the orienteering game. We hung flags out in the woods. And wherever there's a circle, there's a flag. Would you like to try to find one?
Can I?
Yes, you can.
All right, what do we do first?
Well, we know we're here.
Uh-huh.
We want to go there.
Yes.
So you have to decide what the best route is for you, whether you want to take the trail up or whether you want to cut through the woods.
Okay, well, here we go.
Okay. Let me show you.
Okay.
The best thing to do is to think of a bird flying above the park.
Okay.
Okay.
If a bird was flying above the park wouldn't move.
Right.
So there's the park.
Yeah.
Let's be birds.
Okay.
We fly above the park.
Right.
The park isn't moving.
Ah.
The park is not moving.
Yeah.
Now the trick is.
Yeah, okay.
To do the same thing by, but have it in your hands.
So the ground doesn't move.
So walk around the map now.
Right.
See?
Gotcha.
There.
Everything on the ground stays stationary. Gotcha. Okay.
Feel good?
Mm-hmm. All right.
There's our flag.
We found it.
Oh, yeah, but now you have to punch, LeVar.
Oh, that's right.
Punch that card.
That's right.
And that proves you got there.
Excellent.
You did great.
Cool.
I have some flags I got to set up.
Okay.
I got to go.
Take care. Alrighty, bye-bye. Chris runs orienteering courses in both the city and country, and although this may have seemed easy, try adding about a dozen more flags, a lot more people, and a time you have to beat. Chris is setting up an orienteering course that will run through Central Park. The course will have 7 points. Chris marks each point with a flag along the way and a red circle on the map. The route will take the teams around the lake and through a thick forest known as the Ramble. And what's the object of the game?
The object is to find all the flags in the shortest time. Everybody gets a map. Everybody gets a compass. Okay. Take care of your map. You're going to need your map all day. Come on over here. Stand right here and face the lake. Okay. Welcome to Central Park. You're holding in your hand our orienteering map for today. Okay. And on it are, like any orienteering map, are a lot of colors. Most of this map is blue. You can see that big lake. And we are at the lake. Remember, we are at the start triangle right here. And you can see the 7 flags are located wherever there's 7 circles, and they're numbered. And you can also see, basically, our course is around the lake. If you keep the lake next to you, you should be able to find all the flags. Okay, first group's up to the table.
Okay, your start
time. Okay, just put those right there.
11:54.
Okay, 10 seconds. You got to hold your punch card. You got to hold that little finish card. You got to hold your map. You got to hold your compass.
5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. Go! Have a good time.
Each team is made up of 3 kids who have to work together to figure out which way to go. The kids have only their maps and compasses to stay oriented. They must use them or they could get lost and fall way behind.
We have to cut down this trail, come down there, and then we're good. Yeah.
The course is just under a mile and will take about an hour from start to finish. Each team has to be alert and constantly aware of its surroundings. Being able to compare your surroundings to the map is the key to staying on course and finding the flags.
Over there, that way.
This is a great opportunity to hang an orienteering course in the woods because the Ramble is really thick, challenging orienteering woods.
Now we're gonna go like, I think we should go that way. Because it says, to go that way.
Yeah. Central Park looks very different in real life than it does on paper.
Where's the next flag?
We can't tell you. We tried to stick to the lake, but it didn't really work.
And with the bridges, there's a whole bunch of other bridges.
Yeah, there's so many bridges.
I'm going to follow that last group and shadow through there. And a shadow is somebody who follows behind the team to make sure that they're doing the right thing.
I feel like we're lost because I said we should go a different way. And those two guys said, let's go this way.
If help is needed, Chris is always nearby.
Hey guys, what's happening? Where are we?
Well,
first thing, what do we got to do? We got to orient our map. Orient our map. Where's the compass? Put that compass on there, turn it out. Now, we were at 5. Somehow, I guess you wandered out. We're somewhere down near the water. If you look over there, you see the big fountain. So we're right about here. Which way is 6? Point to 6. If we're here, where's 6? Look, follow the compass. Which way is the compass pointing?
That way.
Yeah, 6 is up that way. Let's go.
Number 6 is leading the kids out of the ramble now and bringing them along the edge of the lake back home.
Only one more flag to go. With map and compass to guide them, Michael, Tyler, and Jenna successfully complete the course and head for the finish line.
They did great today. Considering it was a little cold, a couple groups got turned around inside the woods a bit, but that's okay. They were able to relocate and find themselves and find their way out. They all had a great time. I'm proud of them. I'm very proud of them because they use their map and they use their compass and they use their heads.
Knowing how to read a map is great when you're trying to find your way, but sometimes it's helpful to just get good directions. Oh, hey, excuse me. Hi. I'm trying to find the place they call Nutter's Battery. Can you help me get there?
Oh, sure. Yeah, you just go straight down this path.
Oh.
Take your first left.
Uh-huh.
Then you're going to hit a fork.
Right.
Go right.
Okay.
And then go about an eighth of a mile and you should be there.
All right, so it's just down this path. I'm going to take my first left, mm-hmm. and then I come to a fork, and I turn
right,
and yeah. then an eighth of a mile, and I'm there.
Yeah.
All right.
Got it?
Thanks.
Okay.
Now, that's what I call terrific directions, nice and clear. How about you? How would you give directions to, say, your best friend's house?
We have to go up the hill, down the hill, then up, down another hill,
turn left, turn right, go straight.
Go that way, and go this way, and go this way.
You go straight, you make a left, you gotta walk up this hill, turn right, you go back straight.
You get off at exit 4, and then you keep going.
You make a left, make a right.
Then there's 2 blocks more.
You see this red fire hydrant down the block to the right.
Then you turn the corner.
And then on this side, that's the house, and then you just walk in.
Now, those kids have what I call a great sense of direction. At times, it may seem like Central Park is laid out any which way, but it was actually designed with a real plan in mind. The idea was to create a space that people could enjoy that would still feel as natural and as wild as possible. Now, parks aren't the only settings that are carefully designed. In fact, I know a place that you will really go ape over. Is the Pico Primate Reserve at the Philadelphia Zoo. This exhibit of gorillas, orangutans, and other primates is very new. Years ago, the old exhibit was destroyed in a fire. And so Andy Baker, the curator or manager of the reserve, led a team to rebuild it.
Our primary interest was in providing the best home for the animals we could. They don't really care if the exhibit they live in looks like a rainforest. What they want from their exhibit is the opportunity to climb, to jump, to play, to forage, those types of things.
The reserve was also designed for visitors. Lots of glass means kids and chimps can get up close and personal. At the same time, plenty of space gives the animals some privacy too.
The animals can get up above where they're going to feel safe, and yet if they want to come close, again, visitors can get very close to the animals.
Becky Calvanese is a zookeeper. Her job is to feed and care for the animals.
Have
probably the best thing about the way Primate Reserve was designed is the height of the exhibits. These are animals that, all of them, in some level, live up in the trees. And by having a tall exhibit, that lets them use their natural abilities of climbing and jumping and really gives them the chance to get the full extent of exercise. They get to really use their abilities as best they can. And that allows them to be much healthier and much stronger.
He's hanging from the ceiling.
The height of the exhibits also presents some challenges for the keepers. Those nice high shelves still have to be cleaned, so we use a lot of ladders and do a lot of climbing and taking care of our animals here.
When we started planning this facility, we thought about a lot of things. We have the animals who live here, we had to think about them. We have the keepers who work in the building, we had to think about them. And then, of course, we have our visitors, we had to think about them.
Details like these don't just happen by accident. Everything begins with an architect's plan. Architects are the experts who figure out how things should look and where they should go. The first step is to sketch every room in the zoo. These drawings are used to create blueprints, special maps that show where every door, tree, and window will go. The blueprints have exact measurements, like how deep to dig, how wide a room should be, and how high the walls can go. Architects even have a model to show exactly what a building will look like after it's been built.
It's very hard for most people to look at a two-dimensional drawing and see exactly how it might work as a building when it's in three dimensions. So the model let us pretend we were walking through the building, see how things fit together, what worked, what we thought would be difficult, and guided some of the changes we made during the design process.
If you look at the exhibits, they do have quite a few windows, and that actually allows a lot of natural light into the exhibit. When we come in the morning, we turn on the lights, but if you look at a gorilla in the wild, it's not like the sun comes up in a heartbeat and then it goes right down at the end of the day. It's very gradual. By having a lot of windows in the exhibit, that allows them to see the sun come up and basically let the sunlight slowly come into the room in the morning and slowly go out of it at the end of the night, just like it would if they were outside.
Taking care of animals is both an art and a science. And one of the things we tried to do is make the best use of the space, both from the visitor's point of view and the animal's point of view.
Well, I do have to say that I love working here in Primate Reserve. You get to learn a lot about some amazing animals who can do things that we really can't do, and to see them in an up-close and personal way that you really don't get to very often.
Here's the fork, but I can't remember if she said left or right. Oh well, I'll try this way. If the idea of finding your way has you looking in a new direction, then here are three books that will set you on the right path. But you don't have to take my word for it.
Hi, I'm Emily. Making maps is fun. Want to learn how to do it? Then you need this book called Mapping Penny's World. Lisa is the girl in the story. Her teacher wants the class to make a map. Lisa makes a map of her bedroom. The key shows what the symbols mean. Lisa likes to make maps of everything. Her dog Penny likes to hide things, so she makes a treasure map. Lisa and Penny have lots of fun with their maps. Maybe they'll use a map for a trip around the world. Maps can take you anywhere, and no matter where you're going, don't forget this book, Mapping Penny's World.
Mazes, mazes everywhere, and lots of fun for you. Take your finger through the book, that's all you have to do. In this book called Pipsqueak's Maze School. For Pipsqueaks, everything is a maze. They make mazes all day. In the sandbox, on the playground, even snack time turns into a maze. It's fun to find your way through a maze. Turn left, turn right, go up, go down. Mazes are like maps. You have to find the right path. I'm Adam. If you're looking for fun and a book that's cool, go pick up this one, Pipsqueak's Maze School.
Hi, my name is Maxine. I just read a really interesting book called How Tall, How Short, How Far Away. Can you guess what it's about? It's about ways to measure things. In ancient Egypt, they had very different ways of measuring. A digit was the width of one finger. A palm was the width of four fingers. In ancient Rome, they used different kinds of measurements. They measured longer distances using paces. This book is full of ideas for things to measure, like a stick of celery or your pet's tail. This is a great book, so if you want to measure something, measure your paces down to the Goka Library and check this book out. How tall, how short, how far away.
Hey, there are my friends. You know what? This turned out to be a great shortcut. This is the fastest I've ever made it across the park. I'm gonna remember this route. If you get good directions, follow a map, and orient yourself, I know you can make it from point A to point B, no matter where you are. Well, I've reached my destination. Now I hope you reach yours. I'll see you next time.
Hey, you guys.
Today's Reading Rainbow books are The Secret Shortcut by Mark Teague, published by Scholastic Press. Mapping Penny's World by Loreen Leedy, published by Henry Holt & Company. Pipsqueak's Maze School by Patrick Merrill, published by Scholastic Incorporated. How Tall, How Short, How Far Away by David A. Adler, illustrated by Nancy Tobin, published by Holiday House.